Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. So happy to be with you today. It is Tuesday, October 13th. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California. I'm here with my big sister, Julie Dolan, in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Jewel, what's happening there? Anything?
Hi, Leanne. I just love Tuesdays. You know, this is fun to get together.
And it is.
You know, I mean, I look forward to it, Leanne. There's something special about it.
Thanks. I feel the same way, Jewel. I feel the same way. You know, the Tuesday show, it's just a show where we can really chit chat. This is actually like a phone conversation we might have. So, especially today, I think.
Yes, indeed, Leanne.
We are going deep on some shallow topics today. So Julie has some good news for coffee lovers. Yeehaw.
Oh, you are going to be so happy when you hear this. You're going to be so happy.
Okay. We are doing a tech pod. So if you're wondering about screen time for your baby or how to talk to your kids, we have that for you. I have to get a ruling on a wedding announcement I saw in the New York Times.
Ooh.
And then we're going to tackle something we have not tackled here on Satellite Sisters. And it's this question. Can I wear tights with open-toed shoes? Oh. Yeah. Okay, Julie, we're gonna get to that.
Because really breaking new ground, Leanne. Mm-hmm. Nobody
yep.
else is doing that topic.
Yep.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then of course, we have our Madam Secretary recap at the end of the show. Episode 2 happened this weekend. So we're going to be talking all about that. But Julie, first you want to talk about the contest. You're the best. It's exciting to know that people are getting their copies of the book now. It's really fun to see, isn't it?
I know. People are posting pictures of the book with their coffee mugs or in the box. I love it. Put up more pictures. But the other thing to remember is we are giving away copies of You're the Best, A Celebration of Friendship. We're doing it for, we want to see pictures of your Satellite Sisters. So you can put it at our Facebook group page, The Satellite Sisters, or you can put it on our Instagram at SatSistersYTB. That's the hashtag, SatSistersYTB. It is not too late to get in on the fun. Okay, we have two more weekends that we're going to be picking winners. So you still have a chance to win our random picking here, and we would love to send you a copy of a book. But more importantly, we'd love to see your friends. I mean, it's so nice to see all these smiling faces on the Facebook page and at Instagram.
I am enjoying it too. So, Julie, you're in charge of this, and you're doing a bang-up job. And again, thank you for posting that you're receiving the book and that you enjoyed it. It is a little weird when the book comes out sort of weeks before it's supposed to. So,
I know, Leanne, you like control.
I like control.
And Amazon is not behaving.
No, they're not behaving. There was a system to all of this, but this contest has been a super bright spot. Really fun to see. Again, for more information about our speaking events or anything else about the book, go to satellitesisters.com. That is your best resource there. But keep posting those pictures. They are really fun to see.
Leanne, do you have a cup of coffee right now?
I do, as always, Julie. Although I'm trying to cut back, but I have two very strong cups of coffee every morning.
Okay, so I have my cup of coffee. We even say that we tackle the world one cup of coffee at a time. Isn't that what we say here at Satellite?
It is.
So I have some wonderful news. You know there's the question. It's been the unanswered question. Does coffee count towards your daily water intake? Have you ever had this debate with people?
It's on the same level as can I wear tights with open-toed shoes? But yes, I have.
Okay.
I have.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, debate is kind of a strong word.
No, it's not, Lee. Okay. Well, you know you're supposed to, you know, hydrate and have 8 cups of water or a day. That's what, you know.
Right.
And it differs from person to person based on your size, actually, how many cups of water you actually have to hydrate. But here's the wonderful news. You know, that for a long time there was this myth that somehow coffee does not count towards your daily intake of water. But I have some good news for you, Leanne.
Yes.
It actually can count towards your intake of fluids, okay? That coffee in many ways is healthier than a soda or sports drinks. And if you drink unsweetened coffee, which is essentially water, you're doing fine, Leanne.
All right. That is good news.
Fine.
Yeah.
That's That is that, you know, a lot of people say, you can't drink coffee. That's going to dehydrate
you. Diuretic, right? Yeah.
Well, no. The answer to that is no, Liam. Okay. From this day forward, in a recent study that they find that coffee, in fact, does hydrate you. They also tested it with other liquids that, you know, they did the same study with beer. And while beer gives you a big hangover if you try to hydrate yourself with beer, you do end up hydrated. Isn't that amazing?
Really? I thought the whole point of, really?
Yes. No, okay. Just stick with me. But I'm going to go back to the coffee. Okay. I got a little off track there.
You did. That sounds like one of those facts Sheila pulls out occasionally.
No, I know. It does sound. I took a left turn. Okay, but stick with me, Liam.
Okay.
That you can count your 2 cups of strong coffee, okay, because mm-hmm. you drink it unsweetened.
I do.
And as long as you have fruits and vegetables in your diet, that in fact, that can help to hydrate you, okay? So you count that towards your hydration every day, Liam, okay? And don't let anyone tell you differently, okay? That's the answer. And of course, coffee has other properties that are very good for you, that it can lower your chances of cancer, of high blood pressure, of cardiovascular disease. So just drink up the coffee, you know?
You know, I mean, actually had a young woman at one of those juice bars say to me once, I was debating like what to get. And, you know, normally I don't take health advice from young women that work in juice bars.
That's smart, Liam. That's smart.
But I said, you know, I think I'll just have a cup of coffee. And she said, yeah, it's better than a soda or an energy drink because at least coffee is natural. And I hadn't really thought about it, but that's pretty much what your article is saying too. It is better than a diet soda or an energy drink. It's fairly natural. So especially
if you drink it unsweetened,
you know, I do.
Not pumpkin spice lattes.
Nope.
That does not count towards your hydration. Now, obviously the doctor did say in this study that if you drank 8 cups of coffee, in lieu of water, it's going to make you very edgy.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You'll be hydrated, but you'll be edgy. Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't think that is an optimal state. Okay. So, but you're hydrating when you're drinking the coffee, and that's
you
what
go.
You need to know. I assume the same is true for tea. If you're a tea drinker, as long as you're not putting sugar and a bunch of milk in there, you should be doing fine. Mm. Okay.
I do put milk in there. I hope that doesn't negate it. But
well,
I'm just going to assume it doesn't in terms of the hydration.
They did not say anything about the milk. So I just, as your doctor,
healthcare professional
here on Tuesday mornings, I think you're going to be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, but the paper was chock full of other important studies. One that really caught my eye, the American Academy of Pediatrics came out today, Leanne, and they are revising their ironclad guidelines for children's babies and screens. That would be television screens, computer screens, you know, phone screens, watch screens, you name it. Because I don't know if you've been around parents with young children, but, you know, if a child is under 2, that the standard for the last 15 years, the rule, the recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics has been shield your children from the screens. They're not supposed to be in front of the screens for any amount of time. And you know, you go around, you know, when I'm with my grandchildren, I mean, my sons will just like, you know, block my phone because they don't want, you know, the babies to see the phones or anything like that.
Oh, really?
So, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very strong. Very strong. That screen time was going to be, you know, that this was really a problem. But guess what? The American Academy has said they have figured out that screen time is actually now, you know, equals time, that screens are everywhere and they have to come up with some new recommendation because it's nearly impossible to shield your young child from all the screens.
That's true.
They have to come up with a new recommendation to move with the technology and to recognize that not all technology is the same and not all media is the same. And actually there's sort of 3 different categories. There's a consumption, there's creation, and there's communication. So the big recommendation that I am so pleased about, Leanne, is mm-hmm. that there is a big difference between plopping your baby down in front of cartoons, either on a television set or on YouTube, and video chatting with your grandmother.
Okay.
So it's thumbs up. You can video chat all you want with Urban Nana. Okay. I got the big green light on that, Leon. Okay. There is no problem for me to do that, but that is totally different than, you know, letting your infants watch YouTube, or, you know, just handing them an iPhone. You know, because that's really
well. That you see a lot. Yeah, you see parents just hand the phone to the kids.
I mean, they can't help it. It's like I don't know what it's like. It's like gold.
It is.
I mean, little Josephine, she starts to pant when she sees that iPhone. She's like, she gets so excited about it. Okay, but they also said that, for example, you know, if you're a parent and child, if you are reading a book to a child on a Kindle or on an iPad, how is that different from reading a child a book, like an old-fashioned book, a paper book? And they're saying that really what's important in the reading process is the parent-child interaction.
There you go. Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter if, you know, if you are reading on a, you know, an iPad or not. You know, they're also trying to figure out, well, can an iPad be a toy? You know, and they've done some experiments with that. And certainly, you know, they have children go into these labs, and they, you know, when children play with blocks, for example, they can see that there's a greater brain engagement than if a baby is just sitting there watching Baby Einstein on an iPad.
Okay.
So some things are better, but, you know, like, and some things don't even transfer. So, for example, if a child is playing with a wooden puzzle, okay, and learns how to master a wooden puzzle, that skill does not transfer to if the child is on an iPad and trying to do a puzzle on an iPad. You know, that the swiping and moving is different. So, so they don't really don't know, but they've got to come up with a, you know, they're working on this. This is a preliminary report. They're going to try to figure something out. They still don't think that, you know, a child should be in front of a screen for no more than 60 to 90 minutes under the age of two.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, that you just have to let some screens into your life.
Apparently. Right.
That's it. So.
Right. I mean, it's easy to say no screens. That's just wildly impractical. I mean, all the recommendations for screen time for teenagers or middle school kids They're dated and they're impractical. All their schoolwork is on a screen. All their homework is on a screen. Everything, you know, studying together with friends, it's on a screen. So you're right. There's just a reality check that it would be helpful for doctors to address. It sounds like they are. So, it's that great interaction. The one thing I would say, though, is if you think your child is getting behind in any way, they'll be fine, you know? Right. I mean, they're going to figure out the screens at three as opposed to two. You know, it's not we have this sense that we need to rush kids into everything from organized sports to, you know, coding. And it's not true. Like, they're going to be fine if they get on board, if they have access to information and access to, you know, technology, they're going to get on board. As soon as you let them on board, they're getting on board. So you don't have to worry about that.
They definitely want to do it. But that's true, Leon. I think that you think, well, oh, I better get that Baby Einstein thing.
Right. Because they're getting behind.
Yeah. I don't want my child to be behind by the time they get to preschool.
Right.
So I think that is, you know, a lot of people are trying to, as we are, Leon, we're trying to cope with our new world,
right.
You know, and all the technological advances in it. But there was a very interesting article a couple of weeks back in the New York Times. It was done by an MIT professor, Sherry Turkle, and she's written a book called Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. And for the last 30 years, Professor Turkle has been studying how humans are interacting with devices, you know, and mm-hmm. her big concern right now is face-to-face communication. And she believes that it's really in jeopardy. That's the bottom line, that we really have a situation now that unless we try to address it, we're going to lose something. I mean, here's some of the stuff that she's found, that she said right now, 89% of cell phone users have used phones in social gatherings. Like, when we get together everybody has a phone and they're using them in the social gatherings. Mm-hmm. And that 82% of the people responding to her pretty large survey say it hurts interaction. She said that she spends a lot of time observing teens and college age kids because they are obviously they're the latest adapters to this technology. They've integrated it in a much more fundamental way into their social interactions than either your generation or my generation.
Yeah, because they grew up with it. They don't know any difference.
They've right. So, I mean, they talk about, have you heard of this, the rule of three?
You know, I read this article. It was a fascinating article. Put a link on Satellite Sisters. I'm glad you're talking about it. Yeah, I had not heard of that, but now I'm aware of it, really aware of it.
And I've observed it with our own nieces and nephews when they get together. And what the rule of three says is, let's imagine six people are sitting together having a conversation. At least three of those people are paying attention to the face-to-face conversation, and at least three people will have their heads down and are doing something on one of their devices. And that they are, you can measure this and monitor this by watching where their heads are. Are they facing each other? Are they looking at the faces, or are they down looking at their devices? And the people that are looking down from time to time will put their head up and listen to the conversation, and then somebody else will put their head down. But in a group of six people, you do not have all six people listening to the conversation.
Yeah, and I thought what was interesting was that she's observed that people are monitoring this. Like you won't even bother talking unless two other people are looking at you.
Yeah.
Like if you're sitting in a group and all six of you are on phones, there's no point in even talking.
Yeah.
that was interesting.
I mean, these devices have, she says there's a magic about them because it means you are always available to everywhere, to anyone.
Right.
You know, think about that. And that you are never bored because you have one of these devices in your hand. And it allows for absolutely no lulls in the conversation because there's always, something else is popping up, but it limits the type of conversation that you have because you don't want to get into subjects that are too deep because there is this chance that you're going to be interrupted.
Right.
In fact, can you imagine? I mean, she was saying that she writes that even if you don't have your cell phones on, let's say you've seen that, like people go out to lunch, they put their cell phones on the table.
This is all generations do this. This is not limited to just teenagers and 20-something.
Right.
So this is everybody, the people that put their phone on the table. Yeah, I thought this was fascinating. Go ahead.
The mere presence of a phone can change the conversation. It keeps topics to a certain level because they are topics that you wouldn't mind being interrupted, because at any moment the phone can ring.
Right. That really shocked me just because that is such a natural for people now. Just put their phone on the table like it's always there. This reminder that something better could be coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So even a silent phone disconnects us. Okay. And she said that this is having a tremendous impact on our empathy and on our patience. I mean, she was saying that a lot of younger people don't like face-to-face conversation because of what she refers to as the 7-minute rule. Have you heard this?
Go ahead.
Yes, in the article, which means that it takes approximately 7 minutes to see how the conversation is going to unfold. And many people just don't have that patience to go 7 minutes. Okay. She says that this is what people refer to as the app generation. They're expecting the world to respond like an app, that the world should work like algorithms, and that this is, a very unintended consequence of this technology. So, but she doesn't have the answer yet.
Right.
I was just racing to the end of this article thinking, oh, well, I what are we going to do? What are we going to do, Professor Turkle? But she believes that, we are resilient and that we can adapt, but that we really have to step back and think about, about these devices and the impact on face-to-face communication because it's so essential to being human beings.
Well, you know, the one tip just to not put your phone on the table, that could change a lot of people's lives. I think that's a good one. So I, you know, even if you just start there, even if you just start there and then try to figure it out. Yeah, there was a lot. We'll post a link to that article. I thought that was really an eye-opening article. And you can see it. People don't want to go through awkward pauses. They just pick up the phone. Or no one sits alone and kind of just waits for things anymore because you always have your phone there. And it does. Right. It is addictive. It is. Right. It is a siren call. And you don't have to experience any awkward silences because there's a phone there. You can always pick it up. So I know. I thought
well,
it was.
We're going to keep talking.
Okay.
And we're going to talk.
I have my phone here because I have a related story. As a matter of fact, actually on my phone because it was the only way I could access the Wall Street Journal. So I have to do my passcode now. So just hold on a second.
Okay, but she's dipping out of this conversation.
So I am. Better has come up. But that's interesting that you pitched this because I saw a piece in the Wall Street Journal today by Sue Schellenbarger. Now, remember Sue? She was on Satellite Sisters many, many times. She wrote the Work and Family column, still does, at the Wall Street Journal. And every single time I had to introduce her, I butchered her name. Do you remember
yes.
Sue?
Yes, I do. I do. And you would go into a panic. We would put the little spell check there out for you and still no success, Leon.
Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we... We love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life. Aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful yeah. glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria Seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea. Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leon, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing. To get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah, any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but FrameBridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you are going to be happy, okay? And that's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit FrameBridge.com or see a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's FrameBridge.com. Thanks, FrameBridge.
I would call her Shoe Sellenberger. I mean, I managed to mess it up almost every time. And she was lovely and gracious and kept coming back mm-hmm. on Satellite Sisters. But her column in the Wall Street Journal is always full of handy tips. And so this one caught my eye. It's the smartest ways to network at a party and how to behave at a work event. Okay. But I thought it was helpful if you're coming to any of the Satellite Sisters meetups, or we're going to be walking into a lot of rooms in the next couple weeks that are, you know, with the book tour where we won't really know people. And right. when you show up at places and you're just standing there and you're thinking, okay, now what do I do? How do I start a conversation with people? A natural instinct these days would be to pull out your phone and pretend you're checking your email. But right. Sue has right. some excellent tips, some do's and don'ts. So okay. I thought I would pass these along. Okay, first of all, do come with prepared with topics to discuss or experiences to share. Julie, this first of all, most of the information we cover on Satellite Sisters is perfect for a light party.
Particularly the Tuesday show.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we've got a lot of topics here. I know this sock story Leon has coming
up. It's going to be big. Yeah,
it's going to be such an icebreaker, right?
Okay.
You can go up to the CEO of your company with this sock story.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. finally, final word. Shoes with yeah. tights. Can you wear them? Okay. How about this? Observe others' facial expressions and body language in deciding whom to approach. And she outlines in the article that if people are open, if two people are standing open to the room, so they look like they're in conversation, but they're both open, that means they're approachable. If they're actually face-to-face having a conversation, probably not a good idea to break in.
Right,
she said the
right.
best group to break into is like three or four people standing in a straight line, kind of looking out at the room, that they are probably wow. going to welcome new energy and a new face into the conversation because they really don't have anything to say to each other, but they're trying to network at this party. So I thought that was good.
I don't think I've ever like surveyed a room that way, but
yeah.
this is very interesting to really look at, you know, the sort of the clusters of people and how they're facing. Yeah. Okay.
All right. How about this? Look for opportunities to help others with information or introductions. So I appreciate people who are good introducers. Have you ever,
well,
this is so-and-so, she does this, this is so-and-so, this is how you might know her. Yeah, I like people like that. So there you go. And then this is a good tip. It's hard to do, but keep at least one free hand of snacks and drinks so you can shake hands. Right.
So you shouldn't just go to the buffet table and bar and sort of load up, because that's a totally legitimate strategy at events.
Yeah.
Just to eat a lot, eat and drink a lot, you know, because then you're doing something.
Right.
You're not on your phone.
Right.
But you're busy. You
right.
know, it does. So, you know.
It is one of those weird things. So I have to say, when people stick out their hands and your hands are full, like that's not helpful either.
Yeah.
You know, a little wave is good. Little air, you know, a little
a
punch
nod.
Or something.
Yes.
Nod. Well, that's the next tip, Julie. Look for eye contact or a nod as a signal that you can introduce yourself. Time to come in. Eye contact.
Green light.
Yep. All right. Here are the don'ts. Okay. Don't measure success by the number of business cards you collect. I don't think people worry about that too much. Don't look over the shoulder of the person you're talking to in case someone more interesting shows up. We're
okay.
all in. We're
have,
all.
Have we all done that?
We have all
we
done all? That. I mean, in Los Angeles, that's all people do because they're
really?
Just waiting for someone famous to show up at any
it's
event.
It's the 7-minute rule.
Yeah.
You don't get your 7 minutes with these people. But I've also been, I've been on the receiving end of that too, where
yeah.
you can tell that they are just.
That's cold, isn't it?
They so do not want to hear my sock story, you know, or they don't want to hear the good news about coffee, Leon, you know. And see, I think
they
that often. I hear that. I think that coffee story could go far because,
yeah.
you know, it's not controversial. You know, right. everybody has an opinion about coffee. So,
well, they did say that when you're coming up with the, you know, something to talk about, pick something mm-hmm. like you know, the World Cup or so, you know, something non-controversial.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How about this? Don't try to look smarter and more competent so that others will be drawn to you. I don't know how you do that. Try to look smarter. And then don't demonstrate your power and influence by talking in a loud voice. That's not helpful either. But we know people that do that, walk into rooms and just want to be the center of attention. And again, this is to network. Your goal is to meet other people. But this was my favorite don't. Don't assume anyone standing alone is a loser and should be avoided.
Right, right.
You know, because I've stood alone at things. Like if you don't know anyone, sometimes it takes you a while to get your bearings. I was at that press event for Malala a couple weeks ago. The opening, it was a LA premiere, but it was at like 9 a.m. I didn't know one soul there. So I walked in, there was like a coffee thing and I just stood there and I tried not to look at my phone because I wanted to appear open and I tried not to look like a loser. And I was very grateful when a guy came over and started talking to me. He said, "Oh, you must be so-and-so. I work here." He was very open and honest and very forward. And I really, really appreciated it. So, so see, I wasn't a loser, Julie. And
I know you're not a loser, Leah. You're not a loser.
So,
but I think that, I mean, what if you do get stuck with a loser? You know, what if you like, you know, try to approach someone and realize like, okay, there's this, you know, you're there for business networking, you know, and this person is not going to be helpful. Is there some gracious way? Does Sue have some tips on like how to like extricate yourself from that conversation?
No.
You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean. And no, she doesn't. So here's my tip. Just go, "It was great talking to you. Enjoy the conference," and walk away.
Okay, Leah.
Well, again, you don't owe these people, you know, you don't, right. Just because you talk to one person, you don't have to be stuck with them all night.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's what I would say. But there are no tips. There are only the do's and don'ts for that. So
okay.
There you have
okay.
It.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful. I think we'll try some of these techniques. Okay?
Yeah. I just thought the reading the body language, that was a good one. If you're open to conversation, just open yourself up to the room. I liked it. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on to other topics now, Julie. We enjoyed the wedding announcements in the New York Times at Satellite Sisters. It's a hobby that we developed in childhood and we still read them as if I don't know, our life depended upon it. Uh-huh. And so this weekend in the New York Times, there was something you don't often see in a wedding announcement. The bride is a model and the groom is a former professional hockey player. Mm-hmm. And so we get the background of where they're from and where they live and what their parents do. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the wedding announcement, after we've learned about the parents of the hockey player, that his dad teaches special education and once played hockey himself, there's this paragraph. "In the lead up to the wedding, Mr. Avery was arrested on September 30th during a traffic stop in Southampton after police found oxycodone and roxycodone in his car. Mm-hmm. Mr. Avery's lawyers said in published reports that his client had prescriptions for both medications. The couple met in the summer of 2009. Isn't that, what? Have you ever seen like a police report in the middle of a wedding announcement?
An arrest? Well, I wonder, why did they put that in there?
I don't know.
I guess they didn't have control over that the New York Times story. And
yeah.
If they were going to talk about this guy, they needed to talk about their arrest records.
Well, then why? Then why talk? You know, they don't have to put the wedding announcement in.
Right.
Like all of a sudden they're going to get all journalistic-y in the middle of a wedding. Wedding announcement.
And have they done that kind of fact checking on every other bridal announcement?
Exactly.
They put in the New York Times?
Exactly, Julie.
No one else has a rap sheet that's ever been in the New York Times. I would like to know the answer to that.
I don't fault the former professional hockey player. I'm sure he has a lot of pain. Okay. I'm not his doctor, so I don't know why he has those prescriptions, but
I mean, do we have other, did we list the prescription drugs of the other, bridal couples? Cause I think there might be quite a few in that grouping.
Exactly. Right? Exactly, Julie. Exactly. I just thought that seemed unnecessary. Seemed
yes,
like a cheap shot, a cheap shot from the New York Times.
Yes,
you post the beautiful photo. You have the meet cute story. You have details like the bride played lacrosse and field hockey. And then, but then in the middle of it is this paragraph about his arrest record. This is a cheap shot. New York Times. So there you go.
Unnecessary.
All right.
Unnecessary.
All right, Julie, now the story we've been waiting for. Can I wear tights with open... Oh, wait, no, I was going to do one more story. I have another wedding story.
Oh, good. Because I love weddings. Yeah.
All right. How to change your name. All right. This was on the She Finds website. And I'm attracted to these stories about changing your name or what to do or taking your husband's name because I never have. And you kind of have... You have a half-assed name.
I have tried it. In our first book, Satellite Sisters Uncommon Senses, I wrote an essay about this. I've tried it all, Lynn. You know, I tried to hyphenate my name. Okay. Now, this was, you know, early on. That's what people were doing. But people kept saying, are you from Britain or something? You know, they didn't understand the hyphenation. Yeah. And then it's just you can't trying to get a driver's license with the hyphenation. Oh, forget it. Okay. You can't make an airline reservation. So then for a while, I mean, I just sort of kept my maiden name and then I kept three names. I tried that.
Yeah.
Julie Dolan Smith, you know, but that's a mouthful, Leon. Okay. I mean, people are doing it, you know, but it is a mouthful and I recognize that. And again, you run into all kinds of trouble when you're trying to make any kind of reservation have any kind of record. Okay. And some now, so I have all kinds of documents that say Dolan Smith all together, you know, it's a problem. I had a problem this last time with my global entry. And then when we moved overseas, cause I had, you know, you have to go by your passport name. You know, I sort of slipped into, okay, just call me Smith. Okay. Because I was trying to make it more simple.
Which is your husband's actual name. You weren't choosing an alias. No,
I wasn't choosing an alias, which I know some people do, but I've tried it all. So I have a lot of sympathy for people who are confused about whether to do that or not.
Right. And I debated many things. I have a first name that is impossible to pronounce, apparently. And my husband has a German last name that is very hard to pronounce, often mispronounced. So I just decided to stick with my maiden name. But then you slip into habits where the kids call you one thing, which is fine. Like they, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, and that's fine. But for some reason, my health insurance is under my husband's name, even though that's not my name. And so then when you call to try to make an appointment, they're like, who are you? I was like, oh, right. I used a totally different name at the doctor's office. So,
oh, yeah. That's off to a good start when you like can't even come up with your name.
Right. I mean, you sound like an idiot. What name is it under? Oh, I don't know. I don't really know.
Why don't you try...
I saw this, I was like, and the first tip is just figure out your new name. And maybe if we had started with that, maybe if 25, 30, 40 years ago, we had just made up a new last name, Julie, maybe that would have been the way to go. Cause apparently that's what many couples are choosing to do now. So
really make up a new name, not go with either.
Yeah. Yeah, combination name. Yeah. I've actually been thinking about changing my first name lately. I'm so sick of people mispronouncing my name. I can't take it. I was like, you know what? Maybe I should have just changed my name a long time ago. So so this was interesting to me. All right. But here are the things you really do have to do. You do have to get your license, your marriage license. Okay.
Yes.
So you have to walk around with your marriage license. You have to start with your social security card.
Ooh.
Okay. Which again, right there, I think I was just too lazy to do any of these things. So I just stuck with my maiden name. Okay. Then you have to go to the DMV. Okay. You have to bring your new social security card, your driver's license, and your marriage license to get a driver's license with your new name on it.
Okay.
So you may also need like a proof of residency, for instance. So right there, we've just lost half of the brides who are thinking about changing their name.
Because that's about like, I don't know, that's like a month's worth of work.
Right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
You have to take a month off to change your name.
So now it seems fair that maybe both of you should change your names. That would be actually the egalitarian thing to do. Hey, if I have to go to the DMV, so do you, buddy. And then you have to notify your employer. Then you have to change everything else, bank accounts, credit cards, lease agreements, anything else you can think of now that you have all this proper documentation. But Julie... Here was the key tip. Number 7, if you don't have time for multiple trips or calls, you can try a service like Hitch Switch or Miss Now Misses. Julie, there is a service for this now.
You know, Leanne, as you started to talk about this, you know, this process of changing your name, I was thinking to myself, there should be a service. There is a service.
There's a service. So you need to go to Social Security and DMV. But then after that, you can turn over this whole mission to Miss Now Mrs. or Hitch Switch. So that's unbelievable. I mean, that is progress.
I wonder how much that costs.
I don't care. You know what I mean? When you think about the number of...
Okay.
Remember, when you think about, like, how many times you have to have explained your name, Julie? When you think about the amount of stress What Is My Name has caused you over the last decades of your life. I don't know what my name is. Just call me anything.
Okay, Lane. Okay.
I would like, if you've used one of these services, let us know on the Facebook page if it actually worked, like if it was actually easier. Because I think I just thought that is brilliant. That's a game changer, having that whole name thing. I mean, I know in time and memoriam, people have done it. I don't know why it seemed like such a big deal to me, but certainly paid for it. Okay.
Okay, Leanne. That's a very helpful. Okay. Yep. Maybe we'll get that for you for your birthday or something like that.
And as long as you're going to do all that, I may change my first name, you know, just change it all at that point. Why not?
Will you let us know what you change it to?
I know. I was like, you know, if I become a grandmother, maybe that's the time to just completely adapt an alter ego and one that is easily pronounceable. All right. And Julie, finally, can I wear tights with open-toed shoes? Can you? What do you think?
Okay. Now, when you define tights, are you talking about hosiery, like stockings, or you're talking about like dark tights? Black tights. And what color are your shoes, Lane?
You know, it doesn't matter. The open-toed shoes.
I don't know, Leanne. I don't know. I think maybe. I don't know.
It's just such
a bad look, that little like stocking coming through the peep toe, you know?
Apparently, I think maybe there is an age limit, but according to Pure Wow, yes, you can. But here's what you have to do. First of all, you have to make sure your tights look new. Okay, so no pilling at the toes or overstretched patches in the heels, all right? Because people are going to be looking at you like, oh, wow, she's wearing tights with open-toed shoes.
Okay.
All right? Then you have to disguise your toe seam, right? You don't want that seam running across
that's
the top
good.
Of the
that's
toes. Good. It sounds like you'd be on board for that.
Yes, I would, Leah.
Julie, this is going to be tough for us because we don't have a lot of space in this area. Avoid ankle puddling. I know. We both have thick ankles, so.
No, I don't. My ankles are pretty good.
Oh, mine are not. Okay. And so you're going to want a taut, clean line, so no loose, wrinkly ankles. And finally, you have to choose your shoes wisely. So go for attention-grabbing shoes like stacked 70s platforms peep toe.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, whoa. Stop right there. Stop.
Yeah. See what I mean? I think there's an age limit. Yeah.
70s platforms. Yeah. We can't do those.
Or peep-toed boots. Are you enjoying those at all? Peep-toed boots?
I've seen those. And those seem like the most ridiculous things. Because when do you wear them? Because if you wear them without – you can't wear boots without stockings or you know, in the winter because your toes are going to get cold, right?
I guess, Julie. Yeah, boots. I don't know. It never
know.
Gets
those
cold here.
Southern California. I don't know.
I do have a pair of peep-toed boots. I wear them because, as you said, it doesn't get super cold here. But yes, if you're in Chicago, your season for peep-toed boots is very limited. So, Julie, what you don't want to do is wear anything too delicate or too basic. That will look like a mistake rather than a statement. And that's so true of many things, isn't it?
So if you're going to wear this really bad look, you got to go all in on it. You just really have to commit to it. Okay. I like that, Leanne.
Yeah.
I like that.
So don't try it with like Dr. Scholl's. Like that's not going to be a good look. No, Dr. Scholl's.
No, you're going to need like a blue fuzzy vest to wear with this as well. Right.
There you go. So there's a good icebreaker for you. Your next work. Work event. Just heard breaking news. Yes, you can wear tights with open toed shoes.
You just walk right in there and say, yes, I can in my 70s platform shoes.
Speaking of breaking an ankle, man, that's not going to work well. All right. We're the Satellite Sisters. We are going to take a break before our Madam Secretary recap. So for those of you who would like to say goodbye now. Thanks for joining us today. You know, if you need any information about us, you can always go to satellitesisters.com, full service website. You can use the search feature, find some old shows or just recent shows that you might have missed. I do want to remind you that we're doing our You're the Best Encore interview series, where we're posting some of our favorite interviews with guests from the past. We have had Nora Ephron already and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And this week we're posting Liz Gilbert. And she is a
new discovered her, you know, I mean, people don't know that.
Well,
we had her on, right? Didn't we have her on before she became famous, right?
You know what, Julie? I want people to listen to this interview because you are absolutely right. We had Liz Gilbert on. Our first interview that you're going to hear this week is the day her book came out, Eat, Pray, Love came out. And it was really fun to listen to that book, to listen to that interview again, because before she became, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert guru, she was just like a girl who went to Italy and ate pasta. And that's what that interview is like. It's just a very warm and genuine thing. We had gotten an advanced copy of the book. We thought it looked good. And we talked to her about like her experiences. And then from there, the book really took off. So I, you know, just we definitely had her on before she became Liz Gilbert Inc. And this interview is just kind of natural and fresh and genuine, talking about a time in her life that presented her with some very difficult decisions, and these are the options she made. And you can tell Liz has read the book. I didn't even read the book. So because we didn't have time to read all the books. We talked to a million people. So usually whoever was the lead sister would be designated to read the book. And in that case, it was Liz. In fact, I had sort of forgotten I was even on the interview.
Way to go, Liam. Well, we talked to a lot of people.
It's fun to listen. It's fun to hear this conversation.
It's a good interview. Because it seems so doable.
Right. It's just a mm-hmm. super genuine conversation about like, wow, how'd you gain 20 pounds in Italy? You know, it's not, we weren't looking for her to reshape our lives. And so I think you'll find it interesting. I mean, I certainly did. I think you'll find it fun. A different side of Liz Gilbert than you may be used to, you know, a decade later. So that will post this Thursday. You're the Best Encore interviews. Stay with us. We're the Satellite Sisters. Coming up next, our Secretary, or recap of Madam Secretary. You are listening to Satellite Sisters. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California. I'm here with my sister Julie Dolan in Dallas, Texas. This is our weekly recap of Madam Secretary on CBS. This episode was, Julie, the doability doctrine. This is the second episode of the second season. We have just started recapping Madam Secretary, but we did watch the whole first season. And Julie, In this episode, I just kept thinking, my gosh, she must be exhausted. She packed so much into a single day. I mean, it was
exactly what I was saying. What a day Elizabeth is having. Could you even have this day, Leon? I don't know.
I don't know how she did it. Yeah. So on the political front in this particular episode, okay, we had dual storylines going, and we had a Department of State employee was kidnapped in Kabul, okay? And then we had the mystery of where is the Russian president Ostrov, right?
Yes.
That was their fake
yes.
Russian president name. Mm-hmm. And then on the home front, we had the question of where is Stevie all day? So uh-huh. the misguided 21-year-old having a lot of issues disappears for a single day, and that throws the Secretary of State into just a complete tumult, even though she's also saving the world. And then we had to deal with just how many of those floppy blouses does Bess McCord own. I mean, she had another one on, a bright blue one for the whole show. She was wearing that the whole show, wasn't she?
Well, she had it was only one day. She had a very busy day.
It's very busy. So we're going to break it down scene by scene. If you don't know, one of the reasons this is a great show for us to do, first of all, we enjoy it. We like the stars. We like the fact that the executive producers are women and stars a woman. In our past, as the Satellite Sisters, we actually interviewed Madeleine Albright many years ago, and that was really one of the highlights of my professional career. It was such a pleasure to interview her when she came out with her book, which was called Madam Secretary. So you're going to hear a little bit about that throughout the whole recap. Julie, you've lived in foreign countries. So you're essentially our Secretary of State, aren't you? Like,
yes, I am. Well, I'm certainly the family Kremlinologist. And so this week, because it focused on Russia, where I lived for 5 years, I have a lot of insight for you, Liam.
Yes. And I just watch a tremendous amount of TV. So those are our
which makes you very qualified.
Very qualified. All right. So this one is called the Doability Doctrine, which apparently is one of Madeleine Albright's signature doctrines. And we're going to get to that because Madam Secretary, Mrs. Albright, Madam Secretary Albright was in this episode of Madam Secretary. All right. So we open the first scene, Julie. We see the kidnapping of a DOS, Department of State, employee in Kabul, which I believe was actually like a tar pit in Palmdale, California. But I love when I love when TV shows like go to foreign locales, and you know they're not foreign locales. I just love that.
But they have to do it. I mean, but it's a bad way to start the day. Okay, just that, you know, he gets kidnapped right off the bat. So, but they're in the kitchen, right? They start the day. It starts in the morning in the kitchen.
In the kitchen. So where, you know, we asked the question last week on the Facebook page. Someone asked the question, why don't they have any help? Like, how do they get everything done without any household help? And this week, that's all I could think of, because who's cleaning those breakfast dishes?
Me too.
Who made that dinner?
Them on the counter, on the sink, but yet the floors look polished, Leon. So I believe it is Secret State Department people that come in after the family has left to do the tidying up. Yes, I believe we're going to get to the bottom of that, Leon, but I believe that there is some SEAL team that comes in. Yeah.
And then so we learn at the breakfast table also that the Russian president Ostrov is missing. And the young son asks his mother, the Secretary of State, you know, how can dictators do that? And she responds, dictators can do whatever the hell they want. So
yes, that, very important. And I love, yes, and I love that the speculation about the Russian president being missing is the same speculation they have about Vladimir Putin when he leaves town. Is he getting more plastic surgery? Is he spending time with the gymnast girlfriend? What is going on?
Excellent. So, but then we get to the real heart of this scene. We get to the Where is Stevie storyline. Last week, we saw Stevie, their 21-year-old daughter, who had dropped out of college and now is going back. She was dating like a much older man who was her boss at an NGO. Now she's involved with the president's son who's been in and out of rehab. And last week, she was holding heroin for him, which seemed like a bad idea. And no one apparently confiscated it. But we learn in this breakfast scene that Perfect Dad Henry did, in fact, not only did he confiscate that heroin, he tested it. And it must be terrible having spies as parents. I mean, they have access to a lot of information, don't they?
I know that it was impressive as a parental technique to have the whole file there with the drug testing. Yeah. And Stevie's gone blonde in this morning too, which is a change from the previous one. She's lightened up her hair, so who knows what that could mean.
Well, as we know, Secretary McCord said they did some follicle testing on Stevie, so she didn't have any heroin in her system, but she does need some calcium. Yes. So, you know, they came down pretty hard on Stevie. They let her know who's who and what's what. But the truth is she is 21. So, and that becomes the storyline later on in the show. Like, there's only so much you can actually do with a 21-year-old. They are legal adults, but she's still living at home, even though she's back at school. And I don't really understand that, but well, I should, because I have a college 20-year-old living at home with me. So I do understand that. So never mind. So, okay. Secretary McCord gets to work. We find out that she has a Merchant Marine event where she and the Russian, it's supposed to be the Russian ambassador, but it turns out the foreign minister shows up. They're commemorating American and Russian friendship and working together in World War II. Right, Julie? That was the deal?
But this is really key. The Russians feel that they have won World War II. In fact, they don't even call it World War II. They call it the Great Patriotic War. And when you go to Moscow, you can visit the museum, the Great Patriotic War Museum, where they show you how they won World War II. Very little mention of the Americans. I was looking forward to this scene because I thought the Russians were going to make a big deal once again about them winning the war and that the Americans weren't involved.
So we learned that Secretary of State Madeleine Albright will be there. There is the first pin reference in this.
I know.
Which was nice to hear. If you remember, one of Madeleine Albright's signature looks was these giant pins she would wear on her suits. And she told us and that, you know, she was, once you start wearing pins, then you're just given pins. So she had this huge collection of pins in her office and she would just throw them on. And she did try to pick the pins very carefully. They were, they were well conceived, which pin she was wearing to which event. So we learned that Bess has received a pin from Madeleine Albright and Bess wants to wear her pin on that event. So I'm thinking, where is the pin? Where's her pin collection? We don't know, but we do know that there's a minor storyline of one of the State Department employees, Jay. Okay. He's like the policy guy who apparently.
The guy with the beard.
He apparently spent the hiatus in Brooklyn because now he has a full beard. That doesn't look real. Like, I don't believe you'd be allowed to work for the State Department looking like that. Do you?
I think it's probably giving him some gravitas. That's the idea. You know, that he's the real policy wonk, the thinker. He's coming up with the big plans. Yeah.
Okay. So that's kind of a minor storyline. And then we switch over to Henry. He's teaching at the National War College. He's mm-hmm. trying to recruit this Russian to turn against his country. And what we learn is that the Russian sister is very sick and that this could be a point of vulnerability for him. And so the NSA tells Henry that if he decides, he can use this as a tactic to turn the Russian.
You know, that's really a key point, because I think one of the things that you appreciate is that the Russians have tremendous patriotism. But there's something that they hold more dear is their family, you know, and that they would, that trumps any nationalism that they might have. So the fact that, you know, that he's going to the sort of the soul of the Russian soul there, the core of the Russian soul, that to turn this guy into a spy for the U.S., it has to be involved with the family.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for part of the summer, yeah. I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. Butcher Box gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your Butcher Box account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your Butcher Box on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz, my hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Lee and Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, pros, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Lian's. Okay? And I'm using it. Pros isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, pros, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Lian and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, pros. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And pros is spelled P-R-O-S-E, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, pros.
Okay, Julie, very deep analysis.
Okay.
And I hate to dwell on the hair in this show, but I am still confused by the hair of NSA handler Claire from Law and Order. What is that hair she's doing? Like
my notes say, ombre looks bad in a ponytail. That's what I wrote down watching the event. Yes, I think it's supposed to be providing her with some kind of street credibility that she's too busy to do anything with her hair. She should take the time to do something with her hair.
Yeah, bun it. I mean, put it in a bun, Claire, for God's sakes, or something. I don't know. Whereas I thought Elizabeth had an excellent hair show. Madam Secretary's hair looked fresh and bouncy throughout her incredibly busy day, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
All right. So we're back at the White House. Things are getting real now. They're wondering about the State Department employee. He's been kidnapped. They think that he's been kidnapped by someone who stole the IDs of American, sympathizers working in Kabul with the American Army. But it turns out that no, these were actual Afghanis employed by the Americans. They've kidnapped him. And they're kind of holding him ransom because they were promised that their families and themselves would be allowed to go to the United States in safety if they help them. And that has all fallen through. So they want the U.S. government to follow through on their promises to bring them and their families to safety in the United States. And we understand that the State Department employee is what I have here, quote, a low-value American. And, you know, that's what I am, a low-value American.
I realize. If you're kidnapped, it's all over.
Yeah, it's all over.
Nobody's coming in for you, Liam.
All right. So this sets up the tension between Madam Secretary and the new NSA advisor that the president has hired. And this guy, Julie, he looks like if Freddie Prinze Jr. and Andy Garcia had a baby. Like, isn't his face super familiar, but it is not quite any of those people.
Right. I kept looking at him.
I know. But
his character is instantly hateable.
Yeah.
And there's a real tension between our Elizabeth and this new NSA director, you know, that he is just keeping her out of all the conversations with the president. She's been given the Heisman, as Madeleine Albright says, right?
Yeah.
He's just pushing her out.
He's pushing her out. There's definitely tension, you know, more mystery surrounding the Russian president. All we know is at this ceremony now, the foreign minister shows up. This is someone with whom Elizabeth has a history. He seems to know everybody in the family. He knows Henry. He knows the kids. We're at the big ceremony. And this is a great scene with Madeleine Albright, I have to say. I mean, she's no actress. There's no Emmy forthcoming for Secretary Albright.
But it's wonderful. It's wonderful with wonderful advice, right?
Yeah. She's totally rocking that blue pantsuit. They both have like matching American Eagle pins on, which I like it. And here's what Secretary Albright tells Bess. Bess wants a private conversation with her afterwards so they can exchange this kind of information. Bess is concerned she is being pushed out, getting the Heisman. What's she going to do? And Secretary Albright said, you know what? There's plenty of room for mediocre men in the world, but there's no room for mediocre women.
That's right. I know.
I know. I mean, really, that was a great piece of writing. That's good advice.
It was a great piece of writing. Yes, that was outstanding. Albright doctrine right there.
Right, there you go. And then we do learn about her doability doctrine. And and that is basically, if I can sum it up based on a speech she gave at the University of Chicago, I actually did a little research, weighing the most effective options for a specific crisis, from sending in troops or imposing a no-fly zone to offering non-lethal assistance or giving humanitarian aid. There's a concept where you should maybe weigh the most effective option as opposed to the easiest or the most immediate or the most terrifying, the doability doctrine. So we get that. And then at the end, Julie, what did you think about that line at the end when Madeline's saying goodbye to Bess and says, oh, hey, let me call Condi and we'll grab lunch.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay, I mean, but they are cutting Hillary right out of the lunch, man. What's happening there?
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, no, they cut her out. Yeah.
They cut her out.
I want to know what that was all about.
Okay.
And it also reminded me, I remember when Madeleine Albright was on our show, we asked about sort of the girls' club in Washington. Like, is there a consensus? Is it a nonpartisan effort that women in Washington stick together? And she said, to a certain degree, but if I really have huge political differences with someone, no. Like, the fact that they're a woman does not trump the fact that I don't agree with them politically. So there you go. There's the doability doctrine on another fashion. So we have our Madeleine Albright sighting. It's great. You know, that floppy tie blouse at this point now, it's getting a starring role. I mean, she's got the jacket off, Julie. She's doing it with that blouse.
I know. But it's sort of droopy because she's really in the middle of it. She's got quite a situation. You know, she's got the situation in Afghanistan. She's got her daughter that she's worried about. Okay. I mean, they talked about heroin before 8 o'clock in the morning. I mean, that was quite a bit, you know, and, she just doesn't know which way to go. So she's taking the jacket off, right?
Yeah. She's trying to understand now these people that have kidnapped the State Department guy. What is their motive? Are they decent people? Is this actually a true story? So she looks up their former CO, an American colonel, lieutenant colonel, who conveniently lives in Washington, D.C. And how cute was he, Julie? I mean,
he has been in some romantic comedy movie land because he's so familiar. I could not figure out who that was.
I mean, let's make more room for him in future roles.
Yes. I think that would be a good idea, Lynn.
Hello, Lieutenant Colonel Mike Wilkerson is what I wrote in my notes.
And his cute little Afghani dog. Yes.
Yeah. Very, very cute. So so it's all coming down now, Julie. There's a million storylines happening in the Situation Room. They're trying to get the low-level American asset out. Bess has wrangled a deal and gotten the president to agree to try to, you know, get the Afghans who have helped the Americans out as well and get their families. And they're all racing to the airbase and the Taliban's on them now. And there's a scuffle and, you know, the president kind of puts aside Bess's point of view and stands with the other guy. And the Afghanis go down. They go down. They do not get rescued.
I know. I mean, it was all they were going to be rescued. It was all going well. And then the Taliban shows up. Don't you hate that? Have you had days like that, Lane?
I know.
Where you think you finally got things back on, you know, the plates are all spinning. And then the Taliban shows up. I mean, it was going well. So,
and every time we see a scene like that in the Situation Room where they're like all the chiefs, you know, the joint chiefs and things like that. Do you think that's really how it happens, that there's like 25 people watching? I mean, that's such a Hollywood trope in every movie, like, you know, everyone's watching and hundreds of people sitting around in that Situation Room. It just seemed like, you know, don't those people have work to do and then they could get a call? I don't know. I don't understand.
Well, I mean, it seems like a pretty important thing. And, you know, Leon, we did see the Situation Room pictures, you know, when they were taking down Osama bin Laden. Oh. There were a lot of people in the room.
You're right, Julie.
I think it's pretty authentic.
Okay. Yeah. All right. You're right. You're right. Although he was not a low-level American. I mean, he was Osama bin Laden. No. I don't know. Okay. So it looks like her world's longest day is over. They go home. There's a family dinner scene where talking stick is involved. It's almost not even worth explaining, is it?
The mediation stick.
I mean, that was a little hokey.
Well, I think all families are trying to use any kind of techniques to deal with difficult situations. And everybody was supposed to make I statements, you know, and not accuse each other. But there was some fighting going on. Right.
Right. So they, you know, they're trying to reach a detente. They want to know, where was Stevie all day? Where was Stevie? Like, you know, because the father has plenty of time in the middle of the day to recruit spies, to sign up Dimitri. He's got him. He's held the sick sister over him. All that's happening. And stop by her, you know, classroom at Georgetown to have lunch. No one does that. Who does that? No one does that. Your dad doesn't stop by to have lunch with you at college. But anyway, where's Stevie? Where's Stevie? And it turns out, Julie, where was she?
She was taking the LSAT, Leanne.
Didn't even make sense to me. Okay, don't so give in, Stevie. Don't give in.
She's having the worst day of her life. Okay, she's having an identity crisis. And the way to solve that identity crisis is to go take a standardized test.
Right.
Now, she said she's good at standardized tests. So that's why she did it.
I just seemed like a left turn, didn't it?
But they were very, her parents were, Stevie's parents were very happy that she was going to be a lawyer. You know, it was like all is well now because she took the LSAT.
And I just wanted to know who made that dinner. Like, where did that come from? That was
pasta
like a
look delicious.
I know. That was not takeout pasta. Someone made that pasta. We don't know who. SEAL Team 6, we think. Cooking for MSEC while she's at work, you know, saving people. And then all of a sudden, the Russian foreign minister shows up. And
yes,
he confirms that the Russian president is dead. You know, mm-hmm. tells them they're the first people in America to know, Henry and Bess, because Henry yep. knows everything. You know, mm-hmm. and the Russian foreign minister wants them to promise to keep an eye on his daughter, who Olga,
who goes to Harvard Business School,
yeah.
of course.
Yeah.
But Leanne, this is really where art imitates life, because it is known that when Vladimir Putin was in East Germany and he was working for the KGB early in his career and a member of Stasi, and this is when the wall came down and the Soviet Union collapsed, he reached out to a German to protect his kids in a similar fashion.
Really?
Yes.
Good work, Kremlinologist. Okay.
So this was a very meaningful scene there at the end with the foreign minister saying, you know, take care of my kids.
Mm-hmm. And Bess, of course, is in one of her many bathrobes. She has more bathrobes than our mother. I thought people had stopped buying bathrobes, but not the Secretary of State. And then our final scene, we see Henry reeling in the Russian student. Now he's got him. The president's dead. Russia, as he has known, is over. So even though he's a great patriot, Julie, he does succumb. He wants his sister to be treated and get this special drug trial. So he agrees to work with Henry. So I think that'll be a good storyline.
Yes, yes. Well, it was an amazing day, Leanne. Amazing.
It was. It was. I mean, when my husband comes home every day and says, hey, what'd you do today? I sometimes got to dig deep, you know.
You have to tell him about the socks.
Yeah.
The sandals.
I got to dig deep for stuff. But not her. Every day is crazy. Every day is crazy for Madam Secretary, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a great show. I really enjoyed this episode. I can't wait to see what happens next. Whew.
I know. All right. We are the Satellite Sisters. If you have comments, you can always find us on Facebook. We have both an official page and a group page where there's a lot of chit chat back and forth. We love hearing from you. Just a reminder, our book, You're the Best, a celebration of friendship, comes out at the end of the month. You can find more information about that at satellitesisters.com. Julie, have a fantastic week. I mean, I feel like we just did a full day's work, didn't we?
I do too, Leanne. I do too.
We squeezed it out, man. We talked about a lot of things for a Tuesday. There's a lot of information in this last show. So you take it easy, Julie.
You too, Leanne.
And don't forget.
Or whatever your name is.
And don't forget, call your satellite sister.